Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Top of the Morning on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel. For today, we will dive into the year ahead as the publication has just been released from the UBS Chief Investment Office. Joining me here today in studio to do just that, glad to welcome back Head of Asset Allocation for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office, Jason Dreho. Jason, it's hard to believe, though, year end quickly approaching. I know you're joining us to talk about CIOs expectations for 2025 and beyond. So thank you for dropping by. Looking forward to hearing your insights today.
The year has flown by, Dan, and now we can look forward to another year, another half decade.
Absolutely. So with that title, Jason, of the Year Ahead Report is Roaring 20s, the Next Stage. Before we get into this next stage with the 2025 outlook, let's perhaps first reflect on the year and decade that was. So, Jason, how would you characterize the economy, the markets, and the world as we now embark, as you alluded to, on this second half of the decade?
Well, by many measures, it has been a roaring 20s decade so far, at least in terms of the U.S. economy and financial markets. You know, it's a topic that you and I have discussed on various podcasts, you know, before. So just to put some numbers on it, from an economic perspective, nominal GDP is up 34% this decade. So in just over or just under 5 years. And that includes the pandemic steep recession back in 2020. Now, real GDP is not up that much. You know, this is partly, certainly a large part inflation, but real GDP just in the past 4 years is up, you know, over 10%. So the economy has grown significantly since the pandemic recession ended. Since December 31st of 2019, the S&P 500 price index is up 83%. So you think about like that's almost annualizing to close to 20%, you know, over 5 years. So very strong performance for the S&P 500. And it's not just a kind of a valuation story. Corporate profits for the S&P are up about 70%. So it's primarily a very strong earnings story, you know, certainly some valuation expansion, but it's been a fundamentally driven rally overall. Now, I'd say this has been more of a U.S. story, this roaring 20s concept, and it's kind of why for the past year or two, there's been talk about sort of U.S. exceptionalism. It's been a market theme, and that may be continue to be a market theme to some extent, you know, for next year, and we'll touch on that in a couple of minutes. If we focus more specifically just on the past year, and then we think about, you know, what we expected, you know, in November of 2023 for 2024, in some ways, it's been a better year than we anticipated, meaning, you know, growth, GDP growth in, you know, the U.S., developed markets, emerging markets is better than we forecasted. And certainly, I think that's the case in the U.S. We expect a moderation, and yet the economies continue to grow, you know, above 2%, sort of, you know, above what people assume to be, you know, trend growth rate. At the same time, inflation has continued to come down in the U.S. and Europe, you know, trending towards that 2% target. And central banks have embarked now on a, you know, pretty significant sort of rate cutting cycle that we think will continue. So it's been generally a supportive macroeconomic environment, which is ultimately kind of reflected in the equity market performance, you know, this year. We also titled our 2024 outlook a New World, and noted that one of the dominant themes this year would be elections. It was approximately, I think, 60% of the global population were in countries that it would have had a national election this year. And the U.S. election certainly is the most prominent of that. But, you know, we saw it elsewhere in places like, you know, Japan, India, you know, parts of Europe. Certainly, the U.S. presidential election, we're now in this sort of transition phase. And the outcome of the U.S. election is certainly going to be a major factor influencing both economic and financial market, you know, performance in 2025 and really perhaps the rest of this decade as well.
So, Jason, at this point, we have a good sense for how we got to where we are today, where we stand with respect to economic conditions, the market. So with that, let's now turn to the year ahead, 2025. What will be some of the notable economic themes CIO expects?
Well, starting with the U.S., I would kind of characterize our base case as one of sort of benign growth, moderating from the elevated levels for the past 2 years, but still at a healthy level. We think we'll be over kind of 2%, around 2% growth. So, you know, good sort of trends there, you know, supported by, you know, healthy consumption. Consumer, you know, remains, you know, strong. Fiscal policy, you know, again, sort of directionally supportive. And this kind of ties into the policy questions that are out there in terms of the incoming Trump administration, you know, what they intend to do there. But also, can you expect, you know, interest rate cuts and interest rates to go lower in the U.S. and globally? In terms of the Fed specifically, you know, we expect the Fed will cut 25 basis points in December, so one more before year end. but a total of 100 basis points, you know, next year. There's certainly a risk that if, you know, the economy is too strong, inflation stays a little bit too high, they may do less. But the general direction of the Fed continue to cut rates to get back to some measure of neutral. And this is sort of an open question, what is neutral? But that trend to overall, you know, continue. So I think that, again, this is a relatively benign backdrop, certainly, you know, for the U.S. economy. But there are sort of large tail risks. And I think a lot of this stems from the kind of the questions about what kind of policy are we going to get out of D.C. starting January 20th of next year. There's an upside scenario where this roaring 20s concept, you know, continues and it sort of maintains, you know, that the economy doesn't slow down. In fact, growth may go even higher. At the same time, inflation continues to moderate. The Fed's able to cut rates. And that could be boosted by some combination of, you know, lower taxes, deregulation, and trade deals that, you know, kind of minimize the trade uncertainty, minimize sort of the fear that investors have about tariffs. Mm-hmm. And this could be a positive kind of for the overall kind of growth environment. You know, you further have investment in the AI theme, which has, you know, been very, very significant. So definitely an upside scenario, but there are downside scenarios. And we see two main downside scenarios. One is a more conventional kind of recession, hard landing. The economy, you know, keeps slowing. We've seen cooling the labor market. And sometimes, you know, you can kind of cool. And at some point, it kind of, you reach a tipping point where it starts to cool more significantly into outright kind of cracking. Same thing. There's been some consumer weakness, certainly at the lower end. That kind of could get worse to become enough to would actually kind of cause the economy to go into, say, a mild recession. A low probability, but it still is certainly a possibility. The other downside risk is more like of a tariff shock. If we end up getting the more extreme outcomes on tariffs, a 10% tariff across the board of all goods shipped into the U.S., 60% tariff on all goods from China, that's going to have a negative impact on the U.S. economy, on the global economy, perhaps even more so. It is inflationary. It is a clear downside, you know, scenario, and one that the markets are not priced for at all. So the U.S. policy is going to determine, in some sense, whether we get these upside or downside scenarios. Left to its own devices, again, the U.S. and the global economy, I think, would be doing, you know, fine. And I think going back to my comment earlier about U.S. exceptionalism, some of the policies of the Trump administration, you know, it is America first, so higher tariffs here, focusing on making the U.S. economy stronger. It's not entirely a zero-sum game, certainly, but that would probably have greater negative impact for, say, the, you know, Chinese or European economies. So that remains sort of, you know, to be seen, but that is sort of like the key macro story. Baseline view, relatively benign, certainly in the U.S., but relatively kind of wide range of potential outcomes on the upside and downside.
Well, it's helpful to have this range of scenarios. This way, investors can manage expectations and prepare their portfolios accordingly. With that, Jason, that's a good segue into positioning. If we spend a few moments on the markets, what would you identify as being some of the investment implications of this economic outlook? And what do you recommend investors do now to prepare for 2025?
Well, there are a number of themes that we see playing out next year. Let's call them, you know, these are our kind of key messages and focus. You know, first and foremost, starting with kind of position for lower rates. You know, as I mentioned, we expect the Fed to cut 100 basis points next year, in addition to what would be 100 basis points this year. And other kind of some major central banks, you know, the BOE, ECB, Bank of Canada, also looking to cut rates as well and by similar magnitudes. What it means then is if you are sitting in a lot of cash, the you know, what you're going to get paid on cash is going to decline over the next 12 months. So deploying some of that cash and, you know, to other areas of the market, just within fixed income, you know, diversified fixed income funds, even equity income strategies, you know, they can generate higher returns, but also give you some of that income if that's, you know, what you're seeking from the cash at this point in time. And specifically within fixed income, we still prefer to kind of lean towards higher quality bonds. That could mean, you know, agency mortgage-backed securities in the U.S., higher quality corporate bonds, investment-grade corporate bonds. Mm-hmm. Within treasuries, you know, for example, like a five-year point on the curve is something we like. You know, thinking about the duration exposure right now, a lot of going to the sort of wider tails for the U.S. economy. Rates could go higher. They could also go lower. Mm-hmm. I think that the five-year point sort of is a way to think kind of balance that interest rate sort of, you know, uncertainty, certainly within the U.S. And also, you know, munis, you know, for investors who, you know, considering tax considerations, you know, spreads had sort of widened out, you know, earlier, even just in the fall, they've tightened a little bit. But again, there's some attractive opportunities within kind of, you know, munis as well. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, position for lower rates. pivoting more to equities, you know, overall message is that we still think there's more to go in stocks. You know, it's been a very good year in 2024 and 2023 for the S&P 500, yet we still see more upside for 2025. Our price target on the S&P is 6,600 for by December of 2025. Given the current level, that implies about a 12% price return, a little bit higher when you think about total return adding in dividends. There is some risks to that, maybe even more so a little bit outside of the U.S., given some of the policy uncertainty. So the prospect of tariffs, you know, could be a drag on earnings, but it's more likely to be kicking later in the year. And actually, it probably is more of a negative impact on European and Chinese equities that would be directly kind of hit by, you know, some of these earnings. So on a relative basis, still see right now is the U.S. as kind of the most attractive region for equities at this point in time. A third key message is that we continue to recommend investors seize the AI opportunity. This is a theme that we think will continue to kind of play out well into next year. And again, just to give you some numbers on what we're talking about, in 2024, the calendar year, we estimate that the four biggest tech companies will have spent about $218 billion on AI capex. That's a 47% year-over-year growth rate from 24 to 23. And that's certainly supporting significant growth in earnings for these AI chip companies and cloud services providers. But we don't think this growth is over. By 2027, we expect revenues of the sort of enabling layer of AI value chain, like these are kind of like, you know, some of the semiconductor producers, to more than double to over $500 billion. Wow. So again, just give some context why we think this is a multi-year theme. Fourth, kind of related to the AI story is, you know, to invest in power and resources. You know, big story this year has been the growth in data centers and the demand for electricity. And so this is part of a transformational change that's taking place. And it means there's a lot of significant investment opportunities across power generation, grid infrastructure, and natural resources as the world adapts to increasing electricity demand. AI is part of it, but it's not the whole story. There's industrial electrification, there's electric vehicles, there's global climate goals. All these things are suggest that, again, you know, investing in power resources is an attractive theme. A fifth idea is sell further U.S. dollar strength. The U.S. dollar has done very well this year. It's done well since the election. But ultimately, we think this appreciation, you know, is an opportunity and more appreciation, an opportunity to kind of, you know, sell some of that exposure. Ultimately, we think the dollar is getting sort of overstretched and looking for other markets, other regions, you know, such as kind of, you know, the euro or something to think about for next year. A sixth kind of theme or message is go for gold. Gold has actually kind of pulled back since the election, but we think there are structural and secular demand from central banks globally looking to diversify away from the dollar. It's also a bit of a geopolitical and inflation hedge. If we're wrong on inflation, if geopolitics continues to be elevated, gold could continue to benefit. But there's other metals that will also kind of, you know, kind of could benefit from this, such as copper and other transitional kind of metals tying into this power theme. And then finally, kind of the last kind of more kind of main message is to look for, you know, opportunities in real estate. It's been a difficult environment for real estate for the past, you know, few years as rates have gone higher, particularly sort of commercial real estate, but even residential. We think now that, you know, major central banks and the Fed are cutting rates, some of the constrained supply is going to ease. There's a lot of dry powder, you know, being prepared to put to work in, especially in commercial real estate. So opportunities in things like logistics, data centers, multifamily housing, we think there's opportunities in real estate. And so it's an area that investors have shied away from. But now I think this is an inflection point in 2025, could present a very attractive opportunity for at least parts of real estate.
A wide range of positioning considerations there, Jason, as you laid out some of CIO's messages in focus. And of course, we'll encourage our listeners, our clients, to read further into these messages in focus by attaining a copy of the Year Ahead publication. So before we close out, Jason, if we look a bit further out, let's say over the next decade, what are some of the themes out there that CIO will be focusing on the most?
Well, as we think about the longer term, you know, the title of the report, The Roaring Twenties, The Next Stage. And again, like that's something that I'm certainly kind of focused a lot on is like, how does this thesis, you know, play out? It's going to be shaped by many structural trends, you know, some of which we've already touched on just regarding next year. This includes things like digitization and AI, investments related to sort of deglobalization, you know, changing trade patterns because of perhaps of tariffs, decarbonization tied to, again, moving towards a kind of electrification rather than, you know, using kind of, you know, non-renewable resources. And to, you know, there's kind of policy will impact it. This affects, you know, the upside and downside scenarios by the fact that there's just very high debt levels, certainly in the U.S. public sector. And that's further exacerbated by demographic trends of, you know, an aging population. When I think more about the U.S. specifically, you know, the Roaring Twenties thesis that I've kind of laid out is always been sort of premised on an idea of an investment-led boom that lifts productivity growth sustainably. Mm-hmm. We've seen certainly parts of that kind of play out for the past, you know, few years. And ultimately, it's kind of making the supply side more productive. So again, as we look at towards the incoming Trump administration, what sort of supply side economic policies, and we've talked about this on prior podcasts, mm-hmm. will they enhance the supply side, or could they potentially be more, you know, constraining? We know things like AI is a secular tailwind, and that there's a need for more investment. But ultimately, the policy choices on the fiscal front and sort of the knock-on effects for monetary policy, these will be a big factor in terms of whether this Roaring Twenties, you know, plays out, whether we have a couple more good years and then it comes to naught, or does it fizzle out even sooner? I think that's very much to be determined. Left to its own devices, if policy, I think, is overall neutral, you know, there's still, a pretty compelling case for these structural trends to be positive, certainly for the U.S. economy.
Well, very thought-provoking, a lot there to satisfy further future conversations, though. Jason, thank you for joining us today here in studio to outline CIO's expectations when it comes to the economy, markets for the year ahead, and hitting on those positioning considerations as well with respect to the messages in focus. Thank you again, Jason, for your time today.
You're welcome. Have a great week and a great 2025.
Likewise. Thank you, Jason. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.